So this is exciting for me. This is the beginning of a program of learning Pesachim and Yoni Pesachim B'Iyun. I have an 8:30 B'Kiyas kind of class. We do Gemara Rashi and some selected Tosas. Here we're going to focus on in Yonim and try to add something, embellish something. So for today, we're going to try to understand the Sheet of the Rambam on Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzei. That's going to be our goal. The starting point will be the Ran, and then hopefully Mirtzon will get to the Rambam. And that's what I call Roman numeral number one for today. Roman numeral number two would be to study the Ran inside, and I photocopy that for you in case you don't have one, and go through it pretty in depth and try to figure out what is exactly my obligation with regard to the mitzvah of Tashbisu of destroying my chametz. If we have time, and if there's interest, I would like to also use at least part of that time to learn the Haggadah, to go through the Haggadah piece by piece, and we'll see if there's interest. That would be at least on my agenda, that would be a great achievement. If you have this page, it should say on the top of it Mishnah Pesachim, and we'll go through these sources together and we'll try to make some progress. Please. The Mishnah establishes at the beginning of Masechta Pesachim, Orli Arbos Arbot Kimes HaChomets Lior HaNer, and Kol Mokom She'ein Machnisim Bo Chomets Ein Tzorech Bedika. Now, leaving out some of the nuances here, the nitty-gritty details about when exactly the bedika should be implemented, that's a sugya to itself. Why do you need the candle over here? That's another sugya. If we wanted to rewrite the Mishnah in our language, I think we would say the following. Kol mokom shemachnisim bo chametz, tzarech bedika. Means during the course of the year, you will take chametz into the house. The Mishnah doesn't tell you how often you did such a thing. Presumably even one time would be enough. And if you brought chametz into the house, then the bais becomes muchzak b'chametz. In other words, until we're absolutely certain that the chametz was taken out, once it went in, we assume it's somewhere there. Not all of it, but some of it, presumably, is left over. Although, as I always say, my wife and I actually celebrated the first time we found any chametz during Bedika. Took about 20 years till that happened. But still, the way the halacha operates is that the assumption is if chametz went into the house, then there's chametz in the house. Now, you could divide up the house into different parts. You know, there's certain parts where you do take chametz in, certain parts you don't take chametz in. And the Mishnah goes out of its way to point out that Mokum She'ein Machnisim Bo Chametz, Ein Tzorech Bedika. There are full sugyas about what constitutes Mokum She'ein Machnisim Bo Chametz. For example, you have an Otzer Shel Yayin or Shel Shemen. Maybe the servant went in there at some point during the middle of the meal because they didn't have enough wine for the table. He left his pita there inside the Otzer and so forth. Is that called the Mokum She'machnisim Bo Chametz? Now, obviously, at the very beginning of this Masechta, we have a famous controversy, a debate about the nature of the mitzvah bedika. Are we dealing with a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Rashi indicates quite clearly that we're dealing with a mitzvah d'oraisa. And therefore, Rashi says, Bodkim, what's the goal and what's the machayv, what generates the chiyuv of bedika? Shelo yavar olav v'al yiro b'yimotzei. We need to protect ourselves from these two violations. Tosus has a different shita, because Tosus quotes a sugya later on, a davav that says, Habodik tzorch sheyevatel, and therefore the assumption, according to Tosus, that he made bittel. Once he made bittel, he should have covered his bases, and therefore the bedika, the whole enterprise of bedika is derabanan. And Tosus takes a different path. According to Tosus, bedika has nothing to do with ayurah b'yimotzei, you've already covered that with bittel, but rather, because of Shema Yovel Liochli, he might come to eat the chametz. So that issue will come up bli neder later on today if we have the time for it, when we go through the Ran and he examines Rashi Shita about the nature of Bedikas Chametz. But there's one part of the Ran that we want to focus our attention on at the beginning of our learning, and the Kash of the Argadol, who's one of the super commentators on the Mishnah, is on the Ran, his Kash on the Ran. And that's going to be sort of like the backdrop to our discussion. The main topic for Hakofa Aleph, as I call it, is the Rambam Sheet about Bayiro Bayimotzu. So we're going to learn the Ran, only what's nogea to our particular point here, our discussion for today. The whole Ran, either if we have time the rest of the morning, or we'll leave it for tomorrow. We'll see how time plays itself out. So which Nakuda, what point in this very gigantic Ran are we interested in right now? The Ran addresses the following question in his presentation about Bedika. He wants to know, what happens if a person did everything that he possibly could, he was not laid back or lax about it, he lived up to his requirements and his responsibility, he did the Bedika according to all the halachic requirements, and everything is fine. We need this bedika. And we have no reason to believe at this point in time that the bedika was a failure in any sort of way, that there are any deficiencies in the bedika, until all of a sudden, lo and behold, he finds a piece of chametz. And the Gemara tells us later on in Masechta Pesachim that the reason why the Chazal required bittul and they were not relying upon bedika is because of this very situation, this very scenario. Namely, he did his bedika and then he finds what's called in the Gemara's language a gluski yefefa. Yeah. And the only way he could be protected from this gluski yefefa in terms of its bali rabbi matze is with bittul. And therefore, the Chazal instituted bittul as an addition to bedika. They weren't going to rely totally on bedika. The Ran is also interested in another question, which we'll get to later on. Why Chazal couldn't have just simply instituted the chiyuv of bittul and leave out bedika? And there the Ran has this whole philosophy that bittul is a little bit subjective. We're not sure that everyone will have the right idea, the right kavanah in mind when he does bittul, and therefore the Chazal didn't rely on bittul. The flip side is that although the Torah should have certainly and did certainly rely on bedika, the Rabbanan didn't rely on bedika either. Each one of these two would in and of itself be sufficient as far as the Torah is concerned. Bittul would be sufficient, that's called Midraisa Bittul Baal Masagi. Bedika would be sufficient because the Torah says, check your chametz and destroy it, and the Torah relies on that. But the Rabbanan went a step further. They found a flaw in both Bittul and in Bedika respectively. Two different flaws, two different drawbacks. The drawback of Bittul is that maybe he's not going to have the right intention in mind. You know, maybe he doesn't have the dea of Bittul. Because bittul, as we said before, is very subjective. The deficiency or the flaw, perhaps, in bedika is that he may find a gluski yafa, and if he finds a gluski yafa, then he violates bal yiro bayimotze because he's in possession of a piece of chametz. Had he done bittul, then bittul would have somehow, we don't know exactly how yet, but that's the sugya of bittul, would have somehow nullified his ownership over the chametz, such that even if he found chametz in the middle of Pesach and it's a gluski yefefa, he doesn't own that chametz. He's already been mevatel. But if we turn back the clock to the doraisa level, then on the doraisa level, had he implemented his bedika and there was no bittul, what happens if he finds a gluski yefefa? So here's where the Ran comes up with a chiddush. The Ran says the following. If he finds a gluski yefefa, what should he do? And this you'll see on line 5, at the end of that line. Yevarena, going on to line 6, li'alter. If he's quick about it, he'll immediately take out his brenner, you know, and he'll zap the chametz and he'll go up in smoke. And once again, the Ran is still insisting that if he would do so, he would be covered, at least on a deraisa level. The Torah would find no flaw over here. We're worried about the fact that he missed a piece of chametz during his bedikah. So you know what? Nishkefelech, not terrible. We have a fallback position. As soon as he finds the chametz, he'll burn the chametz. And therefore, he's okay. He's protected. The law has given him total protection. Until the Ran asks his kash. But again, at this point in time, before the Ran presents his question, we're okay here. The Rabbanan are not so satisfied. The Rabbanan are worried because this Kluski of Faith is a very beautiful piece of pastry. He's going to hesitate a little before he takes out his brenner and burns it up into smoke. And during that that period of hesitation, he's going to violate the Yavera of Bal Yerah by Yimotzei. But the Torah would be absolutely satisfied if you would guarantee me that he would burn the chametz immediately when he finds it. Now he asks the Ran Akasha, Veshema Tomar, and if you'll ask me the following question, how could the Torah possibly rely on Bedika? What are you going to tell me? He finds a piece that he missed, because we're all human, and humans every human being has a fault, and maybe he won't get all the chametz. You know, he missed a piece, right? We're all human. Imagine a person has many many rooms in his house. You know, he lives in a palace, and Baruch Hashem, he's very wealthy. He has chametz all over the place. So he did the best job that he possibly could, but he missed a piece of chametz. So the Ran says, no, the Torah is okay with that. Why? Because he'll burn it immediately. Frek the Ran, he asks the question on himself, Shema Tomar, L'mafreya over Ole. So please underline those three words. What it means is the following, that, alright, on day 4 of Pesach, he finds the chametz that he missed during his bedikah. He'll burn it immediately. He's covered from day 4, for the moment he finds it, and on. But what about L'mafreya? What about the first four days of Pesach, when he didn't destroy the chametz, and he owns the chametz, right? He didn't do bittul, because keep in mind, let's not lose focus, the Ran is talking about the mitzvah d'oraisa, which can be fulfilled without bittul. So he didn't do bittul. We're trying to understand why the Rabbanan insist on bittul. But on a d'oraisa level, he's covered. He's fine. He's protected. Why is he protected? Because from the moment that he finds the chametz and on, he destroys the chametz. So says the Ran, that's not so fine. That's good from the moment that what we call mikan ulahava. But what about l'mafreya? I mean, for 4 days he owned the chametz. Yeah. Did he know about the chametz? No. He didn't know about the chametz. Okay, call him a shogeg. You know, but still, even the shogeg, he violates the iser of Bal Yerah by Yimotzei. And again, many different Rishonim and Achronim are going to give different answers to the same question, but we're going to focus our attention on the Ran's answer, which is going to incur the wrath of the Sefer Or Gadol on the Mishnayos. And the Ran's answer is lesser. There's no l'mafreya over here. Forget about the first 4 days of Pesach. That's not even an issue. There's no Bal Yerah by Yimotzei. And why? And here's where you have to underline, and now you have to triple underline. Sha'arei samcha Torah al ha-chazakos. The Torah says we have to rely on a chazaka. Okay, rely on a chazaka. And the chazaka is shebodak bi'osan mekomo sheragil limatzim ben chametz. The Torah says there's certain places where he is wont to find chametz. He checked those places. He got rid of all the chametz. Well, he missed the piece of chametz. Is therefore Yatza Yidei Chovas. The Torah says, I'm going to rely on this Chazaka, and you have now fulfilled your obligation. The Elo Lachush, the Gemara has later on a case where this chametz on top of a rafter, and the Gemara says that since he might, you know, what might happen, it might fall down, and therefore he's going to have access to the chametz, therefore he has to even get rid of that chametz, even though it's al-al. B'kikar v'shmei Korah, it's cool. So let's just summarize the Ran's kasha and the Ran's teretz. The kasha of the Ran is, how could the Torah rely on Bedika? Maybe he'll find a gluski of feifa. The Gemara says that that's quite a serious possibility. And if you'll answer, well, he's only going to violate Bal Yerah by Yimotzei from the moment that he finds the chametz and onwards. And then you'll tell me, well, at the moment he finds the chametz, he'll destroy it. I don't understand, says the Ran. What about the first 4 days of Pesach? The chametz was there, and he didn't destroy it. He violates Bal Yerah by Yimotzei. So the Ran makes a breakthrough shita here. Samcha Torah ala chazakos. The Torah relies on chazaka. And if the Torah relies on chazaka, the bedika achieves, generates a chazaka. That chazaka is that there's no chametz. He checked whoever he has to check, and there's no chametz. And the Torah relies on that. Yeah, but there's only a problem, he kind of lahava. But now he sees the chametz is staring him in the face. Hello, I'm here. I exist. I'm a good piece of bakery from your, you'll fill in your favorite bakery here. When I was a kid here in Israel, they had something called Gerlitz. I don't know, does it still exist?
Yes.
Gerlitz Bakery. You remember that? It's probably the oldest, it's like a landmark here in Yerushalayim, Gerlitz's Bakery. And when I was a kid, even younger than that, there was Chiffon's Bakery, for those who come from Flatbush in Brooklyn. Anyway, they were from great bakeries. So from now on, he violates the chametz. The chametz is looking him in the eyes. So the man says he'll destroy the chametz. He'll take out his Brenner and he'll destroy it. You'll ask me Lamafreya. Lamafreya says there's no Avera. Because HaTorah Samcha L'Chazokas. Says the Argadol, this is a big mistake. The Ran made a big boo-boo. Dvarav Tmuin. Why? We have Chazokas all over the place. This is not the first and last occasion of chazaka where the Torah says that we clarify issues based on chazaka. But he says that kol shematza acharkach, if he finds chametz afterwards, forget about the chazaka. Our chazaka told us that from the moment he achieved and completed his bedikah, there's no chametz there. That's very nice. As long as you don't find chametz, you can naively rely on that chazaka. But now you found chametz, so don't talk to me about chazakas over here. Chazaka cannot contradict the reality. What I'm seeing in front of me is a piece of chametz. So call me a shogeg, he says. There are many cases in Shas where, let's say, a woman had a chazaka that she didn't see dam, but unfortunately, she had a relationship with her husband and she turns out to be person nida, so he has to bring a korban chatos. Why does he bring a korban chatos? After all, he relied on a chazaka. Okay, but the chazaka turned out to be a misnomer. It was a mistake. It was a boo-boo. We relied on the chazaka. It's good to rely on chazakas as long as you have no clarity to the contrary. If you don't know what the situation is and what the mitzvah is, then you rely on chazaka. But now that we know that the situation is different, no one's going to tell me that there was a chazaka. And now Lemafreya, as far as the first, again, whatever it was, the first I called the 4 days of Pesach is concerned, it was a fault, it was a flaw. We mistakenly relied on a chazaka. Call me a shogeg because I relied on that birur, on that clarification, and that birur was not a reliable birur. I mean, it should have relied, should have been a reliable birur, but the mitzias is makhish, it contradicts me. And therefore, says the Argadol, is kol shemotza acher kachometz over lemafreya b'shogeg. And if you doubt me, says the Argadol, havikachol mili disomchid al chazok of a rov. The Torah says you can up front rely on chazok of a rov. Afilu hachi. If to our chagrin and our surprise it turns out to be the opposite, kol shenishtakech, we find later on that this belongs to the miut, and this does not fit into the pattern of the chazaka, is hamiut of our lemafreya. Afterwards, when he knows that this case, this scenario, this situation belongs to the miut, he violates the mafreya, whatever the iser is. He could be a shogeg, we're not going to punish him, no tar and feather, but he's a shogeg. And therefore, says the Argadol, if you're really worried about Shema Yimtza Gluski Yefefa, don't tell me, well, no problem, he's going to burn it on the spot. Okay, he'll burn it on the spot. But until this point, he violated the Avera. Okay, he violated Bishogeg. But don't tell me he didn't violate the Avera Bishogeg. In other words, the Argadol understood that when the Ran says, Hare Samcha Torah Al-Chazakas, what the Torah is saying is that up until the point where in that moment in time where you realize that this chazaka, that this situation was the exception to the chazaka, up until that point the Torah relies on the chazaka, and therefore says the Ran, Shem etomel mafreya over ole. No, there's no mafreya over ole, says the Ran. Why is there no mafreya ole? Because the Torah relies on a chazaka. No, if the Torah lies on Chazaka, then there's no Lamafrey Avrale. Ella what Mikanalava, so it'll zap it and it'll burn it on the spot. That's the Ran's opinion. Says the Argodel, that defies all that we know about Chazakas. Chazakas are only meant to clarify the reality, and we assume, we rely, we guess that it's reliable. But now that we found that it's not reliable, it's Avrale Lamafreya. So again, let's just summarize. The Ran says Avrale, that Lamafreya lo Avrale. And that's why the Torah relied on Bedika. The Argadol says no. Avral Leila Mafreya. Because now that we know the Chazaka was unreliable, again, it was reliable as far as we knew is concerned, so don't call him amazed in any sense. He didn't violate his responsibility. But nevertheless, the Chazaka has proven to be unreliable, and therefore he violates the Mitzias. The Argadol is right. He does have Chametz in his possession. He may not have known about it. The Torah gave him a right to rely on a Chazaka, but at least you have to admit that he violated the Issur B'Shogeg. Because he did have Chazaka, he had Chametz in his possession. Rabbi?
That Chazaka goes to the Mafreya as well?
I don't know what you mean by Lamafreya. I mean, from the moment he did his Bedika, we start a Chazaka.
Right?
And the clock ticks
for
away.
For example, I checked my knife for Shrita, and 10 cows later, I found that...
That's a little bit different, because then I think maybe the situation changed. We're talking about a case where the situation didn't change. With each Shrita, he nicks it a little bit. So at some point... You know, so we go with what's called Chazaka Yikara, Chazaka Dehashta, you know what I'm saying? But here's a situation where we partially made a mistake by relying on the Chazaka. No one is at fault here, Rabbo said. It's not about judgment.
Agreed, I'm just trying to...
But the Chazaka turns out to be a mistake in Chazaka. No, it wasn't that Chametz fell down from the heavens. You know, that Chametz was there from the get-go. The Ran is not denying that. But the Ran is telling us that because I pressed this magical button called HaTorah Somchal HaChazakas, therefore, there's no Avera whatsoever. What do you mean there's no Avera, says the Argonel? Did you have Chametz? I had Chametz. Was it in your possession? Did you do Bito? You didn't do Bito. You own the Chametz. That's an Avera of Bali Rabbi Matze. I'm not going to fault you for that. I'll attach the word Shogeg to you. You know, bring a Chatas. You know, I'm not going to beat you up with 39 Malkas. But don't tell me that there's no Avera Lamafreya, where the Ran overstepped his bounds by saying that because the Torah relies on Chazakas, therefore there's no Avera Lamafreya. That's not true. The Torah relies on Chazakas because we don't know any better. If we would have known, if a little birdie would have whispered, hey, you missed a piece of Chametz over here, for sure he would violate Bali Ravotza. Okay, he didn't get access to that information. He naively relied on what he thought was an excellent Bedika. He didn't miss a thing. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to fault you for that. But don't go as far as to say that you didn't violate the Avera Lamafreya. Yeah, go ahead.
The term gluska is just a piece of chametz. Gluska yefefia indicates that there's something about that piece of chametz that maybe when he found it, he had...
Right.
He established a
relationship. Like that's called Daite. The Gemara calls that Daite Iluye.
Yeah, exactly.
Rashi says, Chasale Lesarfa. He can't get himself to burn it. It's like just a beautiful piece of chametz.
At that moment, maybe... It goes back to the beginning of his Bedika.
Oh, so that's what the Ran is fighting against. You know, you're presenting the sheet of the Argadol, but let's say the Ran sheet, he says, look, what the Torah says that do Bedika, and that's how you'll spare yourself from Bali Rabbi Matze. So the Ran says, and if you'll find Chametz, so you'll destroy it on the spot. Okay, the Torah says you'll destroy them. The Rabbanon are worried about the fact that, as you said before, Daite Aluye, he starts hesitating, you know, he shakes a little bit. It's like, you know, they tell you this guy's an Amaleki and you're holding a sword. You know, you shake a little bit before you kill the Amaleki, right? So here's the same case. He shakes a little bit before he destroys the Chametz. And therefore, he violates Bali Rabbi Matze. Comes along the run and he wants to know, but what about the first 4 days? Did he violate Bali Rabbi Matze? Is there a Lamafreya element here? And the Ran says that's not. The Argadol says no, there's a Lamafreya. So the Ran's argument is Shari Somcha Torah al Chazaka. It's the Torah line on Chazaka. That's very good. The Torah line on Chazaka, but says the Argadol, that's only meaningful until you know, until you find out that you made a mistake. That you again, keep our judgment here, because he had every reason in the world to, he was justified in making this mistake. You and I would have made the same mistake. We did what we had to do, you know, we really got on all fours and we did the bedikah, we were very careful, but we missed a piece. We're all human beings. So the Argonel argues that, you know, the Torah relied on a chazaka until you know that the chazaka was mistaken. We're not going to say that, oh yeah, the chazaka was true, and all of a sudden, you know, at some point in time he finds the chometz and we throw out the chazaka midway as if the chometz fell down from heaven. The chometz didn't fall down from heaven, my friend. It was there the whole time. The Ran admits it was there the whole time. The Ran says there's no violation of Mafreya because HaTorah Samcha al chazakas. So at first glance, Rabosa, what I thought was that maybe the Ran is saying, if the Torah tells you to destroy your chametz, right? Tashbisu siyar b'matecha. So the Ran is asking the following question. Where is my chametz? If my chametz is right here on my table, I got a bag of chametz. Tashbisu, I understand. But the chametz is not sitting on my table. Somehow it's in the cracks and the crevices. It's b'chorinu stuck. So what does the Torah tell me to do? Again, we're going to Rashi sheet. Tos has a different sheet. But Rashi sheet is that B'dikah is Doraisa. So what is the Torah telling me to do? To do a B'dikah. Oh, says the Ran, wait a minute. Why is the Torah putting me into this very dangerous, very, you know, exposing myself to a jeopardy? Maybe my B'dikah is not going to be foolproof. Maybe I'm going to miss a piece. This is the Ran's problem. The Ran is trying to construct the following. You know, the Ran has, in a sense, what I call Shnei Ksuv Mamachishim. Says he's trying to navigate between two polar opposites. One Kosov yells out and says, Tashbisu, make a bedika, do the best you can, and destroy whatever chametz you have. The other pasuk says, but wait a minute, you might miss a piece. So the Ran reconciles this. He says, okay, even if I miss the piece, I don't violate Ba'al Rabbi Motzi, because the Torah told me to do Tashbisu. Lo nid the Torah of Alachei Asharis. The Torah told me what to do. I did exactly what the Torah told me. Obviously, the Torah here is relying on a chazaka. And it's relying on a chazaka to the point in which there's no flaw in that chazaka. There's no violation. There's no jeopardy. There's no havamina that I'm exposing myself to a violation. Otherwise, why did the Torah tell me Tashbisu? So the Torah knew that we were human beings. The Torah knew that we have chametz the whole year round. The Torah didn't say the whole year round. I know some ladies that have the chametz kudis the whole year round. Yeah, so the whole year round, the bias is a makum shei machnisim bo chametz. So on Tuvishvat, if you want to eat a piece of chametz, you got to go out into the yard and eat your chametz. But let's assume that loaded the Torah to such religious you know, in neshei chayil. You know, so we have regular eishes chayil. She'll let you eat chametz until Rosh Chodesh Adar. She's just a regular, you know, she's a regular, you know, rank and file Ashes Kyle. You know, she'll give you till Purim if she's really in a very large mood. Anyway, so the Torah knows that you have chametz coming into your house the whole year round. So what can we do about this? The Torah says, do what you got to do. Do the bedikah, check Macharnu's stocking, and that's how Rashi learns it. And then you do Tashbisu and you fulfill your mitzvah. So the Ran says, if the Torah told me that's what I have to do, apparently the Torah protects me from Ba'al Yerah Ba'al Matzeh. And it must be that this enterprise called bedikah that generates a cheskas ein bo chametz, bayis ein bo chametz, is a chazaka the Torah relies on, and that's gandik, that's finished, and there's no lamafreya over here. So what I thought was that maybe the Ran, if he were, you know, standing in front of the Argonel, and if he wasn't covering his eyes from this great light, he would have responded by saying, the Torah says Tashbisu. I don't have to be firmer than the Pope. If the Torah tells me to do my bedikah and then destroy my chametz, I'm going to do that. Obviously the Torah is protecting me. There's divine protection over Ba'al Yerah Ba'al Matzeh. And even if it turns out that to my chagrin and my surprise that there was a piece of chametz there, is I'm not going to violate my friend. Oh, okay, mikan lahava, you got to get rid of the chametz. Now you have a mitzvah tashbisa, this chametz looking you in the eye. Don't worry, I got my lighter fuel, it's going to go up immediately. So the Rabbanan not happy with that? The Rabbanan think maybe it's a gluski of faith from it? Dai te'aluya, you know, you're going to hesitate. And from now on, you're going to violate Ba'al Yerah Ba'al Matzeh. And the only protection we can give you now is bittul. But on a Doraisa level, you're totally protected. Why? Because we're going to take Pesach and split it into half. We have the first 4 days of Pesach, and then we have Mikan Lahaba from the moment he finds the chametz. As far as the first 4 days of Pesach is concerned, there's no lamafreya. The Ran says there's no violation of Balyarov by Matz. From now on, I see the chametz in front of me, I got to destroy it. The answer is I'll destroy it right away. That's how the Torah operates. That's the premise of the Torah. But I don't think this really answers the question of the Argonel. Meaning, yeah, I can understand what the Ran is saying, but we still have to go one step further. Why is it, or how is it, that the Torah could rely on such a chazaka? The Torah can't create something magical and just say that, you know, you didn't have chametz in your rishus. The Torah has to admit, I did have the chametz there through no fault of my own. I missed it. And l'mafreya, I had violation bali rov by matzah. So even if I can identify with the Ran, because the Ran's issue is how do we deal with tashbisu? You know, you got to tell me that tashbisu is going to achieve the goal of sidestepping bali rov by matzah. But how do you do so? I mean, you know, chazok is a chazoker. You can't create a new chazoker. You know, there's not a chazoker with a small capital ches and a large capital. Every chazok is the same. Chazoker says you rely, you don't have evidence on something, you don't have to clarify. How do you clarify what went on, what happened? Torah says rely on chazokas. Okay, rely on chazokas until you know that the chazoker doesn't apply in this case. This is the exceptional case where the chazaka led me astray and fooled me. I thought I could rely on the chazaka, but it was an unreliable chazaka. So you're going to tell me tashbisu. Tashbisu means I have to fulfill my obligation, and therefore the Torah is going to protect me. How does that work?
Maybe,
how does the chazaka work?
Maybe the rhyme differs from the Argadol in the sense the Argadol said, how do I treat what the chametz was for the first 4 days? He says, that was a case of shogeg. The Ran
right.
says, no, it's not shogeg, it's a case of onus.
100%. 100%. I agree with you 100%. But even an ones is a violation of Al Yoreh by Matzah. The Ran calls it a chazaka. A HaTorah Samcha La Chazakas. That's the problem. If the Ran would have said, okay, the Torah's not really worried about ones. You know, there's a famous machlokas between Rabbi Kiveger and Rabbi Chaim about how the Torah views ones. Rabbi Kiveger understood that onus is an avera, but you just parted from onshim. And Reb Chaim disagreed vehemently. Reb Chaim said, no, an onus is not even a vice avera. So you can plug that in over here. The problem is, the way the Ran answers this question, when he addresses this question, he says, HaTorah Samcha L'Chazok. What do you mean, HaTorah Samcha L'Chazok? Even the Torah, with all the greatness of the Torah is infinite. But it can't rely on a Chazok when the Chazok is not, has not proven itself. The Chazok didn't pan out. There is such a thing in Halacha, by the way, it's not relevant to us, I'll just mention on the side, called L'Kiyum HaDover, not L'Bir HaDover, L'Kiyum HaDover. So, for example, if the Torah would have said that Chometz is only yours if you know it exists, I mean, we're going to see about other Rishonim, but that's not for us today. That's called L'Kiyum HaDover. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about L'Bir HaDover. The Torah relies on Chazok as a Birur. Now, every Birur always has the possibility, even to Edim. The Torah relies on the testimony of two Edim. That's Birur HaDover. It could be, heaven forbid, that the Edim are perjuring themselves. And we may need a whole parash of Hazama in order to prove that. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Baharug Baraglov. You know, two Edim testify that Shimon got killed by Reuven, and then Shimon's walking around on 2 feet. Lo and behold. So the Edim perjured themselves. You know, what we do in that case is a different question in terms of the punishment for the Edim, but that's what Birur is all about. You can have the best Birur with a capital base in the world, but if the reality is not like that, throw out the Birur. Now, again, I'm not judging him in the wrong way, because, you know, he had every right to rely on this chazok. He fulfilled all the obligations and he was meticulous about his bedikah, but now that the chazok turns out to be a bluff, so to speak, now we find the chametz, then he owned this chametz for the first 4 days. So on both sides, we're going to put this on the back burners for a few minutes, and now we want to study the Rambam Shita. The Rambam has a very unique shita with regard to Bal Yoreh Bal Matzah. And in a certain sense, the Masechta that we're really learning, or if we want to wrap our heads around a one Masechta in Shas now, for the balance of our discussion, is not Masechta Psoche. It's a different Masechta. Masechta Makis. We all, I hope, love Masechta Makis, right? You know, I have such fond memories of Masechta Makis. In Masechta Makis, obviously, Kishmo Kenu, we deal with Makis. When are you Chayiv Malkus? For what kind of lava are you Chayiv Malkus? And for what kind of lava are you not Chayiv Malkus? And what I'm going to claim here against the Rambam is that Bal Yerah by Imatz is a classical case of a lav for which there is no malchus. Exactly. It's a lav shein bo maaser. Because you're possessing chametz. You didn't destroy the chametz. You left it in your reshus. That's called shehias chametz bereshuso. That's that you're describing a reality, but it's passive.
It's not an activity.
Comes along the Rambam and he says, I have news for you. I have two cases in which you're going to get malchus for Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh. So Rambam's own creation. So Rambam says the following, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, Eino Loka Mishum Lo Yerah Lo Yemotzeh. Fine. If Rambam would have quit it, you know, quit while you're ahead, everything would be fine. Ella has a Rambam has two cases where you get malchus for Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh. Elim Cain kana chametz bePesach. He went out and he bought chametz on Pesach. Oh, another case, chimtzo. He took dough, added water, and he was machametz the dough. Kidei sheyasa bo maisa. Says the Rambam, this is not your classical Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh, which is a lav shein bo maisa. And as he opened up this paragraph, he said, "Ein alokem yishem lo yiro lo imotzei yesh lo chametz kodem on Pesach ubo Pesach lo biro." If he just desisted from destroying his chametz, getting rid of it, elahinicho bershuso, he continued the situation in which he owned the chametz, possessed the chametz. Is afal pishover al shnei lavim ein alokem ben ator mi pnei shelo osav o meiser. Okay, fine. Makas Maritus, that's a different subject. But says the Rambam, there is a possibility, in fact, two scenarios in which he gets malchus for Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh. One is buying chametz on Pesach, the other is being machametz and Esau on Pesach, making it into chametz. You can actively create chametz. Okay, you and I might wonder exactly how you actively create chametz. That's not for our discussion. I just want to focus on the Rambam's understanding of what we call a lav she'ein bo maisa. Yesh lachkar. Before I saw the Rambam, I would say yesh lachkar, and I think with these two possibilities, we're going to tip the scale in favor of one of these two based on the Rambam. Meaning the Rambam is committed to one of these two possibilities. One possibility is that a lav shein bo maisa is defined by the etzem halav or the ikar halav. In other words, let's look at the lav the way the Torah formulates it in 99 out of 100 scenarios. What is the lav itself? The lav itself is possession over chametz. Possession over chametz is a lav shein bo maisa, and therefore the lav itself is mufka from malchus, completely excluded. We've already classified it and defined it as a lav shein bo maisa. That's one approach. The other approach is to say, no, lav shein bo maisa depends upon how I violated the lav. Forget about the ikar lav, forget about your abstract definition of the lav. Let's look, tachlis, as we say, how did he violate the lav? If you take a look at the second approach, what you're saying is that since he violated this lav through a maisa, and the maisa becomes the vehicle through which he violated the lav, that's enough to make it into a lav sheyesh bo maisa. Notice, lav sheyesh bo maisa, lav sheyesh bo maisa is not generated, is not determined by the lav in abstract terms, but rather let's look before how he violated the lav. And the Rambam apparently took the second approach. The first approach would have said, okay, the hechatimsa, you know, how did you violate this lav? You found the hechatimsa, you found a way of actively violating the lav. That's not malchus. I'm going to look at the lav itself. What's the heft of the lav? What's the abstract definition of the lav? And if the lav is a lav shein bo maisa, that's it. It's not included in the bag in the category of malchus, of lavim sheyesh by malchus. Why? Because the lav itself is a lav shein bo maisa. What is the violation of the lav? If we define it, if we put our finger on it, it's owning the chametz. Ownership is a situation. It's a state of being. It's not an action. Oh, you did an action. You bought the chametz. Okay. So behechatimtza, you found a way of violating the law through a maisa. But that maisa is just a hechatimtza. That's only a preparatory stage. That's only sets up the Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh. But the Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh is not the action of buying chametz. It's the ownership of the chametz. the lav is not violated by creating chametz, but by owning the chametz. The possession of the chametz is a lav shebo maisa, says the Rambam Din. I don't care. As long as you brought about that lav through a maisa, then that maisa generates malchus, even though you would have defined it as a hechatimtza. I'm not going to call it a hechatimtza. I'm going to say it's not a technical way in which you violated the lav, but rather that creates a lav sheish bo maisa. I don't have to define, says the Rambam, the lav in abstract terms. As long as the lav can be violated through a maisa, and the maisa brings about the violation of the lav, the Rambam says you get malchus. In other words, the Rambam thinks that technically we need a maisa in order to generate malchus. If we get that maisa, and that maisa can be identified as the action that brought about the aver salav, even though the aver salav per se, in its very essence, if we isolate, is shevi altas, it's a passive state of being, you're going to get malchus. Because I just want to know how you violated the law, says the Rambam. You violated the law from a maisa, you're going to get malchus. And all the Rishonim who disagree with the Rambam, and it's a long list, and they say that Bal Yerubai Hutz is a lav shebo maisa, they will argue against the Rambam. Let's look and classify the essence of the lav. If the essence of the lav is ein bo maisa, if your violation, although brought about by a maisa, is ownership, and ownership is a matzav, it's a situation, it's a reality, but it's not a maisa, then there's no balance. But the Rambam says no. Unbelievable chiddush in the Rambam. It all depends on how you violated the law. Now, at this point, I would be happy. But I have a Rambam that contradicts this understanding. The Rambam is going to talk now about a possession, and the Rambam is going to say no matter how you bring about that possession, you don't get malchus. Let's take a look at the Rambam Hilchos Geneva. The Rambam says the following: Kol misha mashe he possesses bebeso o bechanuso mida chasera o mishkal chaser over belotase shenemar lo yelecha bekischa bekisecha, right? Vafilu lasos hamida avit shel meraglayim osur. The Rambam does not mention in this particular case where he created a kli that he will get malchus. The Rambam just says the following. Okay, I cut off some of the Rambam here. I'm sorry for that. But the Rambam says, ain't a loka, because a lav shein bo maisa. Does anybody have a Rambam Hilchos Geneva? Maybe I'll read the whole Rambam to you, because I feel a little, you know, sometimes when I use Bar Ilan, I mistakenly cut it off in the middle, because I don't want to burden you with irrelevant words or concepts.
But the lav is lo yihi yelecha.
Oh, so what does it mean lo yihi yelecha? So the Rambam says mashe bebeso. What does mashe mean? He owns it. He's holding on to it.
That means he's aware of it.
And he's aware of it. And but he violates a law. He violates a law. But he doesn't get malchus.
Lo yelecha is a state of being. It's not necessarily...
Right, and therefore he doesn't get malchus, says the Rambam. But the problem is that what happens if he purchases this kli, this midah chaserah, or if he creates the kli? The Rambam says, even in such case, thank you so much, he doesn't get malchus. Where is it? The halacha gimel, right? Kol mi shemasha bebeso b'chanuso midah chaserah mishkal chaser over b'lah. And the Rambam says, why? A lokin alav zeh, this is the part I mistakenly cut out, sharei ein bo maaseh. No exceptions to the rule. The Rambam says, even if he created this kli, as an ovid shel meraglayim, in those days they used meraglayim for fertilizing purposes, whatever they did, and even if he did it for that purpose, he violates the law, but he doesn't get malchus. Then the Rambam goes on to say that, by the way, even if it's your own private midah, which you're not using for sale, you're not in business, right? So you're not really tricking anyone. If anyone, you're tricking yourself. Says the Rambam, that's also included, because the Torah says we don't know when or how you're going to use this midah chaserah. But the bottom line for our purposes, so we'll soon see how the Shagasari tries to deal with this issue, is that the Rambam here, in contrast to the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, assumes that we're going to classify the lav, define its very violation. The violation here is shehiya bebeiso, which means lo yia lecha, you're leaving in your house a midah chaser, a mishkal chaser, you violate the lav, says the Rambam, no malchus. Wait a minute, how did it come about? You know, okay, if I inherited this from my grandfather, that's one thing, but if I went out and I bought this kli, or I created that kli, just like we saw in chametz, if I bought the chametz, I violate the lav with a maisa, I get malchus. Or if I created chametz, I violated the lav poly rabbi through the medium of a maisa, then I get malchus. Here, the Ram doesn't make any distinction. He even has a case where he created the kli, and the Ram says he doesn't get malchus. So basically, what we're trying to suggest here is that there seems to be a contradiction in the Rambam on this very issue. If we take the Rambam about Mida Chasera as our paradigm, the Rambam Shita is, let's define the Lav. If the Lav is Shehiya, if the Lav is Lo Yelecha, then even if you bring it about, you create that situation actively, we're going to define the Lav as a Lav Sheh, Ain't bo mice, there's no malchus. The Rambam Hilchos Chametz Matzah in contrast says, wait a minute, let's take a look. How did he violate the lav? The lav itself is owning chametz, but how did he get to the situation of owning chametz? If he arrived at that goal through a maisa, then he gets malchus. And this is going to be the cash of the Shagas Aryeh. Do you have on your page the Shagas Aryeh? Because I made this page in two different stages.
Shagas Aryeh, Siman Lamed Bet.
Yeah, you may have a page that doesn't have the Shagas Aryeh on it, because I ran out of pages. Okay, so we'll get a copy for you in just a minute. The Shagas Aryeh focuses our attention on a sugya of Aliyah L'Regel. The Torah says, Lo yirah lecha ponai reikam. So the man comes into the Azara and he doesn't have a karbon with him, and he violates the law. Now the question is, does he get malchus? So let's look at the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Chagiga. Again, part of this is not so pressing for us, but since we got to it, let's read the whole Rambam. Sholosh mitzvos nitztav Yisrael b'chol regel mishalosh regolim v'yeluhim ha're'iya shenemer yirah kol zchurcha v'chagiga shenemer tachog la'Hashem elokecha v'asimcha shenemer v'samachta b'chagecha. And the Rambam is going to tell you how you fulfill all of these three by bringing korbanos to the Beis Hamikdash on the three regalim. Re'iyah amur b'torahi shenireh panav ba'azor b'yontav rishon shel chag. So again, it's not enough just re'iyas panim that I show up in the Azara on the first day of Yontiv, but v'yavi imo korban ola. He has to come with a korban ola. Now what happens if he came into the Azara on Yontav rishon and he didn't bring a korban ola? He violates the lav of Panai Rekam. Well, Panai Rekam means that he doesn't have a karbon. The essence of the lav is that he doesn't have a karbon. Says the Rambam. Misha bol azar biyom rishon. Velo hevi ola. Lo dayo shalo osa mitzvah asei. Not only has he neglected, he's been derelict on the mitzvah asei of bringing a karbon. Ella, but in addition, over alosa says, "Shenemer lo yiro panai reikam." Okay, so he comes into the Azor. Does he have a karbon? Has no karbon. Violates an essay. Violates a losa. Does he get malchus? No. Says the Rambam, "Eino loka lav ze share lo asa maisa." Wait a minute. What do you mean shelo asa maisa? The Rambam himself said he did a maisa. Ba bazora. Frektik Shagas Aryeh Bia Lazara is certainly a Maisa. Ella, what are you going to tell me? That's not the violation of the Lav. The Lav is not because he came into the Azara. The Lav is because he's empty handed. He doesn't have a carbon. If he doesn't have a carbon, he's Rekam. So the Shagas Aryeh says, well, that's fine. You know, maybe according to the Rambam Shita, we're going to define the lav, as far as Malchus is concerned, in abstract terms. So we're going to focus on the essence of the lav. What is the lav? What's the kishkis of the lav? The kishkis of the lav is panai reikam. Well, panai reikam is describing a reality and you're passive. How did you bring about the panai reikam? Through bi'alazara. That's not enough to give you malchus. But wait a minute. Isn't that true? Exactly, like two drops of water in the case of Bal Yerovah Yemotzi Chametz. The lav is because you own Chametz, your possession of the Chametz. How did you violate the possession of the Chametz? Says the Rambam, it depends. If you have Chametz from before Pesach, then on Pesach you were totally passive, you don't get Malchus. But if you purchase Chametz on Pesach, and now you brought about the Aver Lav through a Maisa, then you do get Malchus. Well, what greater case could there be, more profound example of bringing about the avera of a lav through a maisa than bias reikonis, where he comes into the azara and he doesn't have a karbon? So let's open up the Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh is dealing with the following issue. The Gemara there wants to know in Masechta Brachos about someone who's wearing a beged of dalet kanfis, and he doesn't have tzitzis, or he finds out that the tzitzis are posel. He's walking around in Rishus HaRab. Not like today where you wear many different begadim. This is the beged that he's wearing. So he's going to have to strip naked in Rishus HaRab. And the Gemara says, Godol kovet abriel shedocha losa se shevetorah b'shevi altas. Okay. So the Shagas Aryeh goes back and forth on the following issue. Is this really called Shevi Altase? After all, he put on the beged, and the Levisha itself should be a Maisa. Why does the Gemara classify or define wearing a beged which without Dalet Kanfis as a lav shein bo Maisa, and therefore we can override that lav for the sake of Kovet Abrius, right? Why is this a lot of Shevi Altase? After all, he put on the beged. So the Shagas Aryeh wants to say the following. Yeah, yes, he put on the beged, but the Avera is not violated by putting on the beged. The Avera is violated by wearing the beged. And wearing the beged is considered Ein Bo Maisa. So follow what the Shagas Aryeh's agenda is. His agenda is that if you have a lav, which in the etzem a lav, it's a shevi altase, even if you violate the lav through a maisa, it's considered a lav shevi maisa. And now the Shagas Aryeh is going to apply that to aliyah l'regel. So he has panav reikam, he doesn't have the karbon, so he's going to ask, well, why does the Rambam say you don't get Malchus? After all, you went into the Azara Bia Reikonis, and therefore you did a Maisa. How does the Rambam have the right to call it a Lav Shebo Maisa? Says the Shagas Aryeh, oh, you see that the Rambam looks at the abstract Lav. He looks at the essence of the Lav, what we call the Etzem Alav. If the Etzem Alav is a Lav Shebo Maisa, then it remains a Lav Shebo Maisa. There's no Malchus, even if he brings about the violation of that Lav through a Maisa. Says the Shagas Aryeh, this is a support to my position, the way I understand the Sugyot Brachos, that wearing a beged, even though the beged is a violation of tzitzis, nevertheless, since the Avera is wearing the beged, not putting on the beged, the putting on the beged, the Levisha, is only a Echetimtza, it's not the Ikar Avera Salav, and therefore it's called a Shevi Altase. And then the Shagas Aryeh is going to ask a question from what's called Makayim Kelayim. The Rabbi Kiva at the end of Makis says that if you have Kelayim in your Sadeh, and we warn you, get rid of that Kelayim, then Rabbi Akiva says you get Malchus for this. So Tosa says, maybe Rabbi Akiva holds that you get Malchus for Lav Shein Bo Maisa, and Tosa proves that this is... Rabbi Kiva also agrees to the Shita Rabbi Yehuda that Lav Shein Bo Maisa ain't lokanol. So the question that Tosfos raises is that why does Rabbi Kiva say that Hamakayim Kelayim gets Malchus? Why is that a valid Malchus if it's a Lav Shein Bo Maisa? So this is going to be a real problem. Why? Let's just line it up. We have two categories. We have one category in which clearly the definition of Maisa depends upon the Lav itself. What we call the Ikar Alav or the Etzem Alav, whatever terminology you like. Let's classify the following cases. We have the case of Mida Chaseira. The Torah says, Lo Yielecha. And the Rambam says, Mashe Bebeso Bechanuso. The Rambam says, This is a Lav Shem Bo Maisa. He created the Kli. He purchased the Kli. That's just the Hechet Timtza. We're going to look at the Lav itself. And therefore, there's no Malchus. Case number two, where he's putting on a Beged, and it has Chiyuv Tzitzis has Dalet Kanfis. The violation here is B'Shevi Alta. So why? Because the Yisur is wearing the Beged, not putting on the Beged. That's the Shagasari. We have, on the other hand, the following two cases. We have the case of Chometz, and we have the case of Mekayim Kelayim. In the case of Chometz, the Rambam, to our surprise, says that if you what? Buy Chometz on Pesach, you get Malchus. Either Lav itself is Shehiyas Chometz for based on the possession, that's the Shevi Alta. I said, no, we don't look at the Ikar Lav, we look at the Hechatimtza. How did he bring about the Averis Allah? So the Rambam says, you get Malchus by your Obey Matzah, if only you did an action to generate your possession over the Chometz. He's not willing to say that in the case of Masha Mida K'tano Mida Chasera. Not only that, in the case of B'Rei Kanis, the Rambam says explicitly that even though he walked into the Azara without a carbon, no Malchus. Why? Because the Aver itself is subsequent to the Bia. Like the Bia is only a Chetimtza that sets up the Aver, but the Avera is Rei Kanis, Panai Reikam. For that you get Malchus. Well, you can't get Malchus, my friend. I have news for you. Because Panai Reikam is what? Is a Lav Shem Bo Mais. How do we reconcile this whole mess? So also, if you take a look at the page that I gave you, we have a very, very interesting Rambam in Hilchas Sanhedrin, Perek Yutes Halacha Dal. I think I can say with almost certainty, it's the longest halacha in the entire Mishnah Torah. Because the Rambam goes through all the lavim of the Torah. And he tells you in which lav you get Malchus, and in which lav you don't get Malchus. Yosef, let me borrow your page for just a minute, and let me see if you have it on your page. I'll give it right back. The Rambam in Hilchson. Oh, very good. So when he gets to number 92, on his counting, his iteration of the lavim, he says the following. Now, what? Keep in mind, that what's common, this is the introduction to this halacha, to all these cases in the Rambam's enumerated list, is you get Malchus. So the Rambam writes the following: Hamakayim chometz birshuso kigon shechimetz isaso. Interesting. The Rambam tells you that you do get Malchus for Bayur Bay Motzah. It's on the list, but look at the Rambam's definition: Hamakayim chometz birshuso. Take a look at the Meiri also. He has another slightly different recording, a list, but in number pei dalet, he says, Hamakayim chometz bepesach birshuso. When does he get Malchus? Al yidei maisa. Kagon shechimetz etza isa pas. You know, the Yehuda is very perplexed by this whole business here, and he says that he had written a letter, and he says the Rambam holds lo daisha over b'bal yoroi, etc., etc., el afilu loke. The Rambam holds get Malchus of Bal Yoroi Bayimotze under those conditions. And Veivesi Raya, and I'll prove to you why the Rambam classifies Bal Yoroi Bayimotze as a Lav Sheyesh Bo Maisa from the Rambam in, here it says Perek Yud Ches, it should be Perek Yud Tes Milchus Sanhedrin, Shekosav, Hamakayim Chometz Bershusa Kagon Shechimetz Isoso. And he gets Malchus. In other words, let's look at the Hechatimtza. How did he violate the law? He says, HaRambam Cholek Al Zeh. This is the Rav Shulchan Aruch. Again, I'm giving you a few examples. And he says, Shemona Kol Chayvei Lavim Al Lokim. The Rambam has an exhaustive list of all the Lavim for which you get Malchus. Ukshigia L'chol Lav. Hanitek L'Esei. Hisnoim Lokim Ha'Esei. Fine. And legabe makayim chometz bepesach hisna gam ki kigon shechimetz isa kidei sheyivo mice. So it's very interesting. The Yehuda and the Rav Shulchan Aruch both understood in the Rambam that even though the avera itself is b'shevi al taseh, But nevertheless, if you violated the Aveir by doing a Maisa that sets up that violation, you get Malkus. But neither the Nodbi Yehuda nor the Rav Shulchan Aruch are sensitive, are aware of the fact that the Rambam himself tells you in two different cases that there's no Malkus because the Lav itself is a Lav Shembo Maisa. Number one, in the case of Masha Mida Chaser. Number two, in the case of Bire Kunis. In both cases, the Rambam spells out that he did a Maisa, and yet the Rambam says he doesn't get Malkus. So it's very nice that you want to tell me that according to the Rambam it depends on whether you did a Maisa or you didn't, and that's how these Achronim understood the Rambam, because the Rambam says, as we said in Chametz, that if he was Machametz in Isa, or he bought Chametz on Pesach, he gets Malkus. That's very nice. But the Rambam himself, in two other cases, contradicts himself. And add to that the Shagas Aryeh's case, where he's wearing a beged with Dalet Kanfis that's not Mitzuyot, and that's called a violation B'Shevi Altas. And we can be okay that for the sake of Kavod HaBrios, despite the fact that there was a Maisa Levisha. By the way, the Shagas Aryeh adds another case where he thinks that it's a pure, classic case of a Lav Sheish Bo Maisa, that's Levisha's Kilai. Because there the Torah says lo silbash. When the Torah says lo silbash, then the Torah is telling you that the maisa levisha is the avera. So for wearing a beggar of shatnas, you get malchus. But in the case of tzitzis, the Torah doesn't say lo tilbash beged beli tzitzis. The Torah says that once you're wearing that beged, guarantee that there's tzitzis on the beged. So the situation of this fulfillment, or the opposite, the violation, is being in a state of wearing a beged without dalet kanfis. But we see very clearly that even though wearing the beged without dalet kanfis was a result of what? Levisha, nevertheless it's considered a bo maisa. So if you add that, you know, and you total, you know, you tally all the results here, and this, we shouldn't talk about elections this time of year, right? But if you tally all the results, what you have is, number one, you have the Rambam in Mida Chaser, number two, the Rambam in Biarei Kanis, number three, we have the Shagas Aryeh in Tzitzis, in a talis built in Mitzuyetzes, and in all those cases, what we're saying is, despite, irrelevant to the fact that he brought about the Avera through a Maisa, he still doesn't get Malkus. It's still called the Lav Shein Bo Maisa, because the Lav itself is Ein Bo Maisa. It's the Shehiyah, it's the ownership, it's the possession, and the Maisa that brought about that possession is nothing more than a technicality. It's a Hechitimtz. But Bosai, what was the other case which we thought was a Lav Shein Bo Maisa, and yet Tosis at the end of Masechet Makkos says you get Malkus? Do you remember I mentioned it to you a few minutes ago? I'm sorry I didn't print it out here. You know, we'll take out a Gemara Makkos.
Was it the Kibbutz
case? Kilayim. You remember the case of Kilayim? What happens? I have Kilayim in my sud, and Rabbi Kiva says I get Malkus. Now you could tell me that I planted the kilayim. Okay, for planting the kilayim, we can understand Rabbi Akiva. Tosfos doesn't need Rabbi Akiva for that. Even without Rabbi Akiva, the Chacham also. But here's a case where he's Mekayim. Why does he get Malkus in this case? Tosfos says nothing more than the fact that he, Rabbi Akiva also agrees that Lav Shein Bo Maisa ain't Lokin Alof. But Tosfos doesn't fear us. He doesn't give us that extra piece. So in Cain, so why does he get Malkus? Talk about getting Malkus for planting Kelayim, das versteh. But talk about Malkus for being Mekayim Kelayim, why does he get Malkus? So this question I think we can answer very simply. Belilis Tavech. Let's say he has Kelayim growing in his garden, and he builds a fence around his kelayim. There he did a maisa. So Rekiva could say, in that case, he gets Malkus. Rabosa, would that solve our problem?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Why not?
Etzem halav.
Exactly. The etzem halav is the cube of kelayim in his garden. And Eli, what he, the hechatimsa, how do you violate, according to Rabbi Akiva, kiyum kelayim? You guarantee the kiyum of your kelayim by building a garden, a fence around your field, around the kelayim. But once again, That's only Eichet Timtza. So why does Rabbi Kiva, who holds, says Tosus Lav Shem Avai, say Lokanov, why does he agree in this case that you get Malkus? And put that together with the Rambam in Chometz and Matzah, and you have the same question about Bal Yerov Bal Yimotzei. Alright, it's true that he violated Bal Yerov Bal Yimotzei through the mechanism, through the vehicle of a Maisa. That was only a medium of Eichet Timtza. But the violation of the Lav is V'Shei Be'Altas. It's the possession of the Chometz. So Rav Soloveitchik was medayik in the lashon of the Rambam. Take a look again at the Rambam Hilchos Sanhedrin one more time. How does the Rambam define this lav of Bal Yerov Bal Yimotzei? I'll give you two possibilities, and then you'll tell me which one is in the Rambam, which one is in my mind. Does the Rambam say Mashe Chometz Bebeso, or does the Rambam say Mekayim Chometz?
Mekayim.
The Rambam says Mekayim Chometz. So Rav Soloveitchik says the following. Listen carefully. Again, I'm not sure if I'm doing justice because it's many years since I went to Sofer. There's a fundamental difference conceptually between being Mekayim and being Masha. Masha means you didn't destroy it. You didn't get rid of it. That's a state of passivity. The word Mekayim means an active creation or an active continuation of something in existence. The Rav gives the following example. Hamakayim kilayim, according to Rabbi Kiva, gets malchus. Aitz alav shem bo maisa. The answer is, because the avera is not owning the kilayim, but being makayim the kilayim. In other words, don't do something to give life or continued existence, to maintain the existence of kilayim. The Iser is not because since you possess Kelayim and you didn't get rid of the Kelayim, you're violating these. The Iser is because you were Mekayim Kelayim. The Iser is because you did something to keep that Kelayim alive and well. In 99 out of 100 cases, you might tell me that there's no difference between Mekayim and Masha. They're both Alav Shem Bo Maisa. But in one particular case, we can see an action of being Mekayim. And that's when you build a God there around the Kelayim. Says the Rambam, I have a case in Bal Yerov Bal Yimotzei where you're considered to be Mekayim the Chometz Bershuso, the Kumviase. And what's that? By making the Chometz or by buying the Chometz. In those cases, you're considered to be a Mekayim Chometz. The Rambam doesn't say Masha Chometz. If the Rambam would have said Masha Chometz, then Shehiyah by definition is what? Is a Shevi Altas. Enochinami, the Rambam maintains that the definition of Lav Shevi Baisa depends upon the Etzem Halav, on the Iker Halav, how you define the Lav. But there are two ways of defining a Lav. One way is called Masha. What are you doing here with this Midah Chasera? It's in your possession? That's the Torah doesn't tolerate that. That's what the Rambam calls Masha. Masha means the state of being. Masha defines the lav as a lav shem bo mais. Same thing applies to panai reka. You're in the azara and you don't have a carbon. Where's your carbonola? You don't bring it? So that state of being in the azara, I don't want to use this term, but it's like chil kedushas azara. You're in the azara. What gives you a right to go into the azara? You're in the azara. Hashem says, pay up. We want to have an encounter. Where's your carbon? He has no carbon. That's called shahia. That's called Lav She'ein Bo Maisa. That means the essence of the Lav is a state of being, is a passive state. The Rambam says, I don't care how you go about doing, getting into that state of being. All that is just a Hechet Timtza. There's no Malkus. However, there's a different kind of a Lav. And again, if you miss it, it's a hair's breadth of a difference, a subtle difference, but it's fundamentally different. And that's not Shehiyah. That's not the situation, the matzah that you're in, but rather the Mekayim. Just that usually Mekayim means I didn't do anything to destroy it. But there's such a thing as being Mekayim where the Torah says that that's the Avera. The essence of the Avera is Kiyum HaChometz. That's an active Kiyum HaChometz. The Rambam asks himself the following question, but we need a Maisa. And in most cases, kiyum hachomitz is b'shevi altas. But lu yitzu, if you had a kiyum hachomitz b'maisa, then you have two things. Number one, you have the etzem alav is alav sheyesh bo maisa. It's just that usually it doesn't have a hechatimtz of a maisa. If I can be makayim, the etzem alav, violating the etzem alav by being makayim chomitz in an active way, then I get malchus.
So if the issue of kalayim is only makayim, the kalayim, then if you didn't build a gadol, you shouldn't be chayav at all.
Rabbi Kiva says the only time you chayav for kalayim is if you build a gadol around it. Our question was, okay, if the Rambam holds a lav shein bo maisa lo kadol lav, I have no problem with it. I'm sorry, if Rabbi Kiva, I meant to say, I mixed up Rabbi Kiva with the Rambam. If Rabbi Kiva happens to be this one sheet in the Gemara that lav shein bo maisa lo kadol, fine. I understand, because the building of the gadol is only a hechatimtza to get to the state where you maintain your, you know, you passively maintain your kilayim. But Tosfos says explicitly at the end of Masechta Malkus, take a look on Daf Chav Beis, he says that Rabbi Kiva also agrees that you get Malkus, you don't get Malkus for a lav shein bo maisa. So it must be that Rabbi Kiva is looking at the hechatimtza. The answer is no. The averas halav is not owning the kalayim, it's not the possession of the kalayim, but being makayim the kalayim. Normally, I'm makayim the kalayim b'shevi altas, so I don't get malchus because I didn't do a maisa. But if lu yitzur, I could be makayim the kalayim with a maisa, then eichinami, I would get malchus. Why? Because of A plus B. A, because the lav itself is the yesh bo maisa, and B, because I implemented it with a maisa. And that's the Rambam about Bal Yiro Bal Yirmatz.
But how can you define Mekayim as being both passive and active?
Well, again, you can talk about two situations. I can violate a lav b'shev v'altas, right? Let's say, for example,
that's what you call Shia. That's not Mekayim.
Correct. Entities. Correct. And in that case, you're holding on to your chametz. But the problem is, even if you're holding on to your chametz, did you do any action to hold on to your chametz? Do you follow? So there's an active way of possessing chametz, and now we have to look and see, how did he get to that active way of possessing his chametz? If he achieved his active way of possessing his chametz through a maisa, then he'll get malchus. If he achieved his active way of possessing chametz by simply doing nothing, he let his ownership continue, that's considered a shevi altas. Rabosai, let's swing back to the Ran that we started with. What was the Ohr Gadol's great darkness that he placed over the Ran?
L'mafreya.
The Ohr Gadol says, fine. The Torah relies on Chazokas. Chazokas is only a beer. And now we found out that there was a Gluski of Eifah. So l'mafreya, you violated Bal Yiro Bal Yirmatzeh. I'll grant you your shogeg, call you an onus, whatever you want to call it, but don't tell me that a Torah is somchal Chazokas. The Ran means something totally different. The Ran holds like the Rambam. What's Bal Yiro Bal Yirmatzeh? Not Masha, but Mekayim. Says the Ran, for that Chazaka could work even if he made a mistake. HaTorah Somchal Chazakas means that the Torah considers it that I wasn't a Mekayim Chometz. Even though, in reality, B'mitzias, there is Chometz in my Rishus, but you can't call me a Mekayim as a Chometz. If I'm aware of the Chometz, and I deliberately allow it to remain in my possession, that's called a Mekayim Chometz. And then you can talk about Kuvasei and Shevi Altasa, how did you achieve that state of Mekayim Chometz? But if the Torah says, do a Bedika, and as a result of that Bedika, you're covered, and you're protected from Bal Yiro Bal Yirmatzeh, then in that case, you're not a Mekayim Chometz.
Doesn't the Rambam have to have a pasuk to be sonochan to even invent the idea of Kiyum Chometz? Where's the idea that there's a lot of...
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I'm not sure what the Makar of the Rambam is, but I'm just reading the Rambam to you, and I'm trying to reconcile all the different Rambam. So, Yechiel's bothered. How do we know that this is a definition? But are you following how we're answering up the Ran's kasha? That's really what I wanted to swing back. That the Ran is operating with the assumption that there's no l'mafreya. How can there be no l'mafreya and chazakas? There's always l'mafreya and chazakas. You rely on a chazaka, but my friend, my buddy, with all due respect, you made a boo-boo, you made a mistake. This chazaka didn't apply in this case. No fault of your own. Again, you're not guilty here. We're not making a judgment call. Call him a shogeg. But you got to admit that it's l'mafreya. there was a violation of Balyarav Bayimotzeh. It all depends on how you define Balyarav Bayimotzeh. If you define Balyarav Bayimotzeh as the fact that I possess chametz, the Argadol is absolutely right. You do possess chametz. You didn't know about it, you're a shogeg, we're not going to tar and feather you, but you violated the law of Afreya b'shogeg. Says the Ran, no, you don't understand. You're operating with a mistaken definition of Balyarav Bayimotzeh. Balyarav Bayimotzeh is only if you're Mekayim the Chametz. The Torah says, how do you get to a state in which you're not a Mekayim as a Chametz? We're going to rely on a Chazakah. The Torah is going to tell you, implement the Bdika, do the Tashbisu, and you're covered. And even with Afreya, you're not in violation of Balyarav Bayimotzeh, because we cannot consider you a Mekayim as a Chametz. Okay. Now, again, Rabosai, at this point, I have two options. It's up to you. I mean, today is like the experiment. It's the first day. I have a bunch of Sfarim here on the Haggadah, and we can do that for 15 minutes, or we can start the Ran, which is really a major piece. You know, I only showed you the tip of the iceberg of this Ran. I don't know. I guess my Rebbe used to always take a vote and then he would decide. So it was no, and we always knew, I think I told you this a million times, whatever Masechta we wanted the Rav to teach and we voted on it, you knew that that Masechta he wasn't going to teach. That's the way it worked. But in any event, let's try to take a little bit of a democratic vote over here. I have a bunch of Sfarim here that I wanted to show you on the Haggadah. These are my favorite Sfarim on the Haggadah. But if you're not interested, you're not interested.
Interested.
No one's interested. Okay, so I'll go on. So, what?
No, interested.
Oh, you are interested?
Yeah.
Oh, I misunderstood you. Okay. So, first of all, I want to show you this sefer. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's a two-volume work. I only have here the first volume in front of me, called HaSeder Aruch by a fellow named Weingarten. You're familiar with it?
There are three
fellows. Oh, it's three already. I didn't know. Man, to get I'm holding on to this for 20 years. I still haven't gotten, you know, finished with the first volume. It's called HaSeder HaAruch. And it's a beautiful piece. I'll tell you, just in the first volume alone, he's got... Oh, I didn't even realize it myself. He has... 111 chapters in the first volume. Wow, you multiply that by three, it gets...
No, they get thinner.
Oh, they get thinner.
The others are Perushim on the Haggadah itself.
This is an amazing piece of work. Amazing piece of work. It's a piece of scholarship because everything is annotated here, you know, with extensive footnotes. But there's also a bit of lumdus. I mean, you have to look for it. It's a, you know, you need a bedik of aran there. But that's one sefer that I wanted to show you. Now, this sefer is for the scholars. And that's called Rabbi Nachum Kasher, Haggadah Shleim. You familiar with this?
Yeah.
The nice thing about this is that
October.
He has not only girsa changes. You know, the Haggadah developed over the course of centuries. You know, we open up Haggadah, we think, you know, it fell down in the Shemayim. I have a friend, Tabori, I don't know if you know him, he wrote his doctoral, not the one in the Gushi, his brother, he wrote his doctoral thesis on the Haggadah, how it developed and so forth. So, but what's nice about Rabbi Nachum Kasher is that he has chapters, and in his chapters, he very often analyzes, you know, the difference between this Girsa and another Girsa. He also has on the bottom, Haoros V'Tziyunim. And it's a major piece of work. So that's number two. Number three, something that's a little bit more contemporary, more recent, is the Moshe Rav Kook came out with Haggadah Shel Pesach for Rishonim. And it's amazing how many Rishonim wrote Pirushim on the Haggadah. Now, I have to admit to you, it's very tedious work, because I don't know if I'd be exaggerating if I said that 9 out of 10 is the same thing. Every Rishon regurgitates more or less the same thing, sometimes even verbatim, word for word. But what's really exciting is when you find a discrepancy between one Rishon and the other. And sometimes it can change the whole meaning. You know, like Vehisha Amda. I mean, a whole different shot in what Vehisha Amda means. And these are Rishonim, so I like to go back to Rishonim. This is my ancient copy. I mean, since then, this is like outmoded, but I'm dating myself. This is my ancient copy of the Beis HaLevi Haggadah, Haggadah Shel Pesach Beis HaLevi, otherwise known as the Brisker Haggadah. And here again, you know, from time to time, there's some really, really exciting stuff. 90% of it is just the Beis Halevi Al HaTorah, which he reorganized on the Haggadah. Again, sometimes it's helpful, not always. You know, this would not be my first on the list. So these are the four, Haggadahs that we have here. Now, in addition to that, the Rambam has his own Nusach of the Haggadah in the back. I call it the conservative Haggadah. It's really, really truncated. And I think what the Rambam was trying to do was he's trying to probably tell you what is absolutely critical for the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a really abridged Haggadah. You could read the Rambam's Haggadah in about 5 minutes. He cuts out almost everything. Like, there's no Dayenu there. I mean, I don't know about you gentlemen, but in my Seder, like, Dayenu is like, you know, everybody all of a sudden wakes up. You know, we're all asleep, and then we sing Dayenu. So the Rambam has a very short Haggadah. And I'll tell you where the Rambam's Haggadah, for me, personally, becomes very exciting. There's something called Nishpach HaYayin. Right, the second kos of the four kos is called the kos of Magid. What happens if it spills before you get to drink it? So again, from where I'm coming from, you guys might not be so sensitive to this, but from where I'm coming from, that's a major catastrophe. If the cup falls, you can't just fill up another cup and drink it as the kos sheni. It would be like the case in Reish Ayin Aleph in the Mechaber, in Hilchas Kiddush, where the Mechaber says that if you recited Kiddush and then Nishpach HaYayin, you got to start from the beginning. You can't just fill up a kos and just drink it, because that's not defined as a kos shel Kiddush. Here also. Now, again, just imagine, and Hayu Dvar Ma'olam, I saw it at my own Seder table. Again, it wasn't me, I'll claim. But, all right, we're mamish, like, up to the end of Magid almost, and boom, something spills, and you're left with like a couple of drops of wine, you know. Thing. So there's another question in Ezekiel where they have to pay the guy because he has to send his suit to the laundry because, you know, you spilled the wine on his suit. That's a different issue. That's a Hilchos Megillah issue in Purim. Very serious issue if you spill wine on somebody's clothing on Purim, whether you're chayef in Ezekiel. But question is, what do I do now? So in Kiddush, you know, Nishkefelach, I'll start Kiddush again. Again, you have issues in Brachas, but I'll start Kiddush again. Take me another three. But now I'm going to have to recite the whole Magid. You know what I'm saying? How long that's going to take me? And everyone's waiting for the Knedluch. You know, nobody has zero toleration to start from Magid. So here's where I pull out the Rambam. You know, and I just recite the Rambam's, you know, abridged Haggadah, you know. And if you'll accuse me of being from those new movements in Judaism, I'll tell you, well, the Rambam's good enough for me. Because the Rambam tells you what's absolutely critical. And one of the main issues in the Haggadah is what's called Arami Ovid Avi. How critical is Arami Ovid Avi? And why? You know, if Yechiel, I can just guess what he's thinking. Where does it say Arami Ovid Avi? Arami Ovid Avi is a parsha of Mikra Bikurim in Parshas Ki Tavo. So in Kol HaKavod, I'm learning Parshas Bo and Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, Chayav Adam L'Aros Esatzmo, and you're quoting to me a parsha in Bikurim, and nobody has a clear answer to that. You know, they'll quote a Yerushalmi here and a Tosefta here and a Mechilta here, but very difficult question to answer. But be that as it may, the Rambam, for example, makes a big deal about Arami Ovid Avi. And this goes back to the time of the Gaonim. You know, the Gaonim were asked about someone who read through the whole Magid, but he left out Arami Ovid Avi. So one of the Gaonim was Rav Nitschanoi Gaon. And we actually have, you know, manuscripts, not his Ksavya, I don't think, but we have manuscripts. And he says, Lo Yotzi Dechovoso, that Arami Ovid Avi is a critical part of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. The question is why? And how do we know such a thing? So that's also a basic issue, and the Rambam goes out of his way to emphasize Arami Ovid Avi. Now, people, unfortunately, when they get to Arami Ovid Avi, as I said before, they're exhausted, they want to get on with the show. That's really the challenge of the night, you know, to fulfill the mitzvah the way it should be fulfilled. And just to read it through, to zip through Arami Ovid Avi, by that time we're famished and we can't wait to get to the thing. And you know, that's the challenge of Arami Ovidov. So he has in this little book over here, which is not so little, 111 chapters, he has a chapter about Arami Ovidov, how important it is, and do we have to understand everything that we're saying? Can you read it in a different language? You don't understand the Hebrew, and so forth and so on. That's in this book. Now, it's very interesting that the beginning of this Sefer, I myself have large notes here, extensive notes, but the beginning of the Sefer is all about preparing for the Seder. And what boggles my mind here is that he has a whole chapter dedicated to Afias Matzahs and what a great mitzvah is to bake matzahs. Now, if no one's embarrassed, I'm just want to see if I can, you know, misery loves company. How many people in this room actually bake their own matzahs? Jeff, you're the only one?
You mean like him?
In Boston.
In Boston, you used to bake your own matzahs. Okay, how long was that? Like for 10 years or something?
No.
Because you lived in Washington, didn't you?
Yeah, we're in Boston for like 17 years.
17?
Yeah.
Wow, give me your toe. 17 years.
Most of it was in Sharon.
So I have to tell you this. I have a friend, you all know him, if I'd mention his name. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a gigantic Talmud Chacham. And he spends minimum 8 hours of baking matzahs. They rent out a bakery. They end up, each person, they call the chaburi, you've heard of that?
Oh, we did the chaburi, yeah, I do this.
They each end up with three matzahs.
Three matzahs.
And they're burnt matzahs. I mean, they're terrible matzahs. And the truth is, I never wanted to ask him because I have a tremendous year of COVID. You know, I have two friends that are geniuses. He's one of them. And the other one is even brighter than him. But anyway, two geniuses. And I never had the chutzpah of asking him until I read this. You know, it's unreal how Gedolei Yisrael, and the question is why, because we have a principle called Hechsher Mitzvah. A Hechsher Mitzvah could be fulfilled by anybody. I don't have to do it myself. You know, talk about putting up a makkah, talk about putting up a sukkah. There were Gedolei Yisrael who did not get involved in building a sukkah. I think you would all admit that to me. Yeah, even something like like preparing tzitzis. You know, there are many chachamim will sit down and do something to prepare the tzitzis, or at least tie the tzitzis onto the beged. And here he has a whole story here about Afias Matzahs. I don't know. So that's a topic that I'd love to discuss with you, why Afias Matzahs is such a big deal. Even Shechita, by the way, I'm not sure that Shechita is more than a Hechsher Mitzvah. I mean, the problem is we make a bracha on Shechita. We spent a lot of time in my 8:30 class trying to figure out why the bracha is ala Shechita, not lishchot. So there's definitely a bracha on Shechita, kuliyamalo pligi. But why there's a bracha on Shechita? If any of you ever heard of Rav Weiss, who gave smicha at YU,
sure.
Do you study with Rav Weiss?
Yeah.
Okay. I somehow got out of it. Anyway, so we won't go into details here. But Rav Weiss wrote a 30-page article on the trying to justify the bracha of Shechita, because he holds that Shechita is nothing more than just a Hechsher Mitzvah, you know, to be machshir the meat and take it out of the state of Nevela. So why we make a bracha on that? But there were Gedolei Yisrael who never held a chalif knife in their lives. You know, I don't know if Rav Moshe Feinstein ever shechted an animal. I don't know. I can't say for sure. But I'd be very surprised if he ever shechted an animal. So when it comes to something like preparing for a mitzvah, or something that's a gedder of a hechsher, like Afias Matzahs. I mean, the mitzvahs for Erev Tochlu Matzahs. So that's an issue. And that's he spends an entire chapter that, if you're interested, that's something that would fascinate my mind, exactly how to call it. Then he talks about what's called Shmura Matzah. What exactly is Shmura Matzah? What do you call machine matzahs or matzahs? And by the way, there's another sefer that I wanted to bring in. This, you know, I have, by marriage, I have a connection to Bells. So Bells has a three-volume work on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. 99% of it is Agadata, but there's a little bit of halacha in there. But in any event, you see that the book is built on a lot of analysis. I'll give you just one point, and then I'll let you go. We read the Shira just 2 days ago, right? 3 days ago. And in the Shira, Chazal say, it's a Medrash, that afilu ubrin shebemei imru amru shir al hayam. That's what it says. Now, the last time I checked it, a fetus in its mother's womb does not have the ability to recite shira. So again, it could be the metaphysics of it. It was a miracle, or maybe the neshama. You know, many. But he says something unbelievable, and he quotes Mefarshim like this. He says it wasn't, Chazal didn't mean to say that they recited Shira when they were at the Yamsuf. It means that when they were old enough and they were mature enough, they recited Shira on the Yam, on the Kriyas Yamsuf. Why? So he quotes a Gemara that says that when something shakes up a woman who's pregnant, Chas v'Sholem, she could have a miscarriage if it's a real shake-up. And at Kriyas Yamsuf, it was like, you know, thunder and lightning. And Chazal say that not one single woman aborted her child. So all the children had to recite Shira on the Yam, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this great miracle that they all survived. Again, when are they chayv to do it? After Bar Mitzvah. So the first Bar Mitzvah, you know, everybody, all of Farshan, because I'm so fast, a whole piece on this. What's the first Mitzvah a Bar Mitzvah boy should do? So if you were in a fetal stage at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the first Mitzvah you did was to recite Shira, the fact that you survived the Yamsuf. All right, Rabbi Moshe, so we'll stop here. I need your feedback. If you're interested, then every day we could do a little bit of Haggadah, maybe for the last 15, 20 minutes of Shia, whatever it is. We did something similar when we did Megillah. We finished up with the Pachad Yitzchak. Here it's more than just Pachad Yitzchak, because I do own a Pachad Yitzchak on Pesach, but it's very different than all of his other Svarim. It's a whole different entity. But here I have these Svarim. There are many more. You could bring in your own favorite Haggadah and share your Divrei Torah also.